We're holding the Kisur Shulchan Aruch. Really, we're holding by the Siman about the holiness of the Shul, but I would like to quickly review a few things that we saw. A person before prayer should clean his body, preferably go to the bathroom before prayer. A person should wear clean clothing, and he's going before a king. It's a good custom to give tzedakah before we begin our prayer. Ani b'tzedek yechazefanecha. The Spartan have a custom to give it by Zarech Zavit. But the point is, before we hit Shemona Esrei, to give tzedakah and to think that we love the rest of our Jewish people, really, when we stand in a minyan, we're uniting with the Jewish people in prayer, and you'll notice that most of our prayer is said in plural terms. Almost all of Shemona Esrei, except for one blessing, the Elokim Nitzar, is said about all of the Jewish people. We had seen that a person has to be careful not to pass air during prayer. A person has to pray when his body is clean, when he doesn't have to go to the bathroom. We had discussed what happens if a person has stomach problems. A person is supposed to wash his hands prior to prayer. Ideally, a person should wash with a cup up to the wrist. If a person knows that his hands are clean, and by going to wash his hands, he's going to miss minyan. So then we say it's enough to wipe his hands. But in general, the correct thing is a person should wash his hands prior to prayer. You'll notice that Rav Bigun, at the end of his class, always goes to wash his hands before the prayer. A person has to try and pray with the congregation, Tfilah B'Tzibur. We had discussed that a person sometimes would have to travel 18 minutes out of the way, even though he's headed in one direction, so he would have to travel back 18 minutes in order to attain a minyan. A person is allowed to go on a trip to a place where there won't be a minyan. That's permitted. If you want to go on a trip, guys are going to Yam HaMelech, and over there won't be a minyan. You're allowed to do that. You're allowed to put yourself in a situation where there will not be a minyan. But if there is a minyan close enough nearby, you should go there. And in general, the Machon gets very upset when guys go on trips to places where there's no minyan. So I said, yeah, but halachically, I mean, they're allowed to. And they said, yeah, but the person should strive to be davening with a minyan, and that should be part of how a person plans his trip, that if he could, he should go to a minyan. If he planned his trip in that way, that's the more correct way to do it, and that is for sure the case. Especially, it's good to enter good habits. It's very easy to daven a minyan when you're in the machon. After you leave the machon, so it's much more difficult. Here, you're being woken on time. Here, your schedule is set up so that the minyan fits into the schedule. The times that you go on trips are really the times that you should be pushing yourselves to maintain what you've learned in the machon. That's when you should really see to it to daven in a minyan.
It's really hard to get to because class ends and you have like 2 or 3 minutes to go to the bathroom, wash your hands, and get to
right. I agree. That's why I try to end the classes at night on time at 7:30, so that guys have the 5 minutes to go to the bathroom and wash their hands. That's exactly why I end 5 minutes before Arvit. Sometimes I used to go to Arvit, but then I realized even when I don't pray, other guys are praying, so they need the time. What?
Question about, I was in a lot of early trips and met from the central procession to Minka, and I was sweating a lot.
And was what?
Sweating.
Yeah.
And so I was still, I was praying, but I was still very wet with sweat. Is that allowed?
That is allowed, but it's preferable to try to get the shul drop before prayer, not to run in that level of piety. The problem with sweat is that if you touch it during prayer, then you have to wipe your hands clean. Sweat is one of the things that ideally a person should wash his hands after touching, and if he's standing in front of it and he can't wash, so he has to wipe his hands clean. But in general, it's a good custom to get into to walk into shul before prayer so that you're focused when the prayer comes, to sit down a few minutes to learn something. A lot of people learn after prayer, which is very, very good. I strongly recommend getting into the habit of showing up to shul 5-10 minutes early and sitting down and learning something before prayer. The prayer is totally different. That's one thing you guys should learn from the Sfaradim. Ashkenazim, if we don't say Tachman, then everyone says, yeah, no Tachman. Sfaradim, why didn't we say Tachman? Sfaradim enjoy prayer. Sfaradim come in, they sit down, they put their heart into prayer. Ashkenazim put their, whatever. Sfaradi walks into shul, he takes his watch off, and Ashkenazi walks into shul, he looks at the clock. It's not right. That's something we should learn from the Sfaradi. Yeah.
About the sweating of the Catholics in Greece, it's in the summertime very, very hot in the temple. In even if you are coming clean and wash everything to the prayer, during the prayer, don't do anything. But you start praying except because it is so hot. What do you do in this situation?
The only thing I've done in that situation is look for a shul with an air conditioner. What can you do? What can you do? I've been stuck in that situation too. We had one Yom Kippur in Bikat HaYarden. In Bikat HaYarden, you're talking about temperatures reaching 40 degrees, 44 degrees. It gets very hot there. And the morning prayer begins in Yom Kippur. And about an hour and a half into prayer, the electric goes out. No air conditioning. And it's Yom Kippur. What can you do? But you should at least try to find a place you feel comfortable praying. And that also includes air conditioning. One of the reasons I don't always wear a hat to prayer is if I end up in a shul where there's no air conditioning, so then I sweat so much I have a hard time focusing on the prayer. Meaning I'll wear a hat and then the drops start dropping into my eyes and I'm the sitter. I can't focus that way. So then I end up taking off my hat. But again, Chachamin Avirosho, the ruler is a smart person. He recognizes the problems before they arise and tries to get the shul where there's air conditioning. If you could. Or thin early minyan. There were times when I used to pray in the summer at 5 o'clock in the morning just so that I could focus on my prayer, because I knew that I didn't have a minyan with air conditioning, but at least if I... it was cool enough that I could focus on the prayer. Some people aren't as affected by heat. People of our skin color and our hair color are more affected by heat. So a person has to know in advance to try and overcome the problem. Ideally, a person should pray in a shul or a bet midrash, and ideally where one learns. So that's why it's preferable to learn to pray here in the machon where you guys learn. Even if a person is not going to make it to Minyan for whatever reason, if he could pray in a shul or in a bet midrash, that is preferable. A person is supposed to have a set place where he prays, and ideally a place where people are not going to bother him. If he knows that this seat is a place where everyone's walking by, it's not a good place to establish. Well, he's supposed to rush on his way to shul and walk slowly on his way away from shul. Just like when a person gets an aliyah, when he goes up to a sefer Torah, he's supposed to take the quickest route, and when he leaves, he's supposed to take the shortest route. The longest route. By the same token, when we come to shul, we rush to shul, and when we leave shul, we take the slower route. If one lives in Israel, so then the proper thing is to don talis and tefillin before going to shul. One should go to shul with the talis and tefillin on. That's why you'll see some people donning it outside in the hallway or in their room. Because the more proper way is that after a person is clean and he's ready to pray, he puts everything on and he comes to shul covered with his talis and tefillin. When we enter shul, so we say Matzavu Alecha Yaakov, how good are your tents, Yaakov, Mishmatecha Yisrael, etc. If a person is ill and he cannot make it to shul, so then he should at least try to pray at the time that the congregation prays. Here in Jerusalem, it's very easy. Our congregation's praying almost every half hour. So you could say, if I didn't make it to the time of my home praying, so all Yitzchak's praying 15 minutes later, then a half hour later. But ideally, a person should try and align his prayer with the prayer of the tzibur. If he can't make it to this, to daven with him directly, at least at the time that they're davening. The shul and the bet midrash have great holiness. They are called Mikdash Me'at. God tells the Jewish people that when they're going to be exiled to Babylon, so then Va'ilem Mikdash Me'at, I will be for them a miniature base of Mikdash. Now sages said these are the shuls and the Beit Midrash. Historically, when Yechoniah, the king of Judea, was exiled, so he and his men took with them some of the stones from Israel and some of the earth from Israel, and they used that to build the shul in Babylon, and in that shul God would appear. Some shuls have the custom to try and get Jerusalem stone, Israeli stones for their building. When it comes to the building of Beit HaKnesset and Beit HaMidrash, there are many intricate laws. It is recommended that if you are the president of the shul or the donor of the shul, you ensure that there's a rabbi who's overseeing the building of the shul, because there are many, many details which are important, which we're not going into, as to how to build the shul correctly and how to build the shul practically. A person has a brit milah, so we say because the congregation is there already in shul, we don't want to trouble them to go to a different hall, so we allow him to make the brit milah in shul. But that is a leniency. We honor the shul so much that even in honor of a mitzvah, we don't use the shul as a whole. That's why it is improper when people want to get married in a shul, or when people want to make a brit milah in a shul. People sometimes have a brit milah at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, and they say, okay, we'll get together in shul, and they think they're doing something good because they're used to seeing a brit milah in shul. But maybe it's the other way around. Ideally, we wouldn't do a brit milah in shul. We don't use the shul as a gathering hall. The only reason why we do brit milah in shul is because we say, if the congregation is already there, we won't make everyone go somewhere else in order to do the brit milah. But to call everyone and say, now everyone comes to the shul, we're going to have a brit milah at 11 o'clock when there's no prayer, nothing going on, we'll all gather in the shul. That's not what our sages had in mind. But if someone invites you to a brit milah, or you don't have to say anything, I've gone to many brit milah that were in shul. That's what they did. They don't know better. Okay, that's not our problem. I'm just saying it's for your guys' sake. When you guys do a brit milah, if you're going to do it right after prayer, so do it in shul. If you're not going to do it right after prayer, that's not... Even for the sake of this great mitzvah, we don't use the shul as a whole. Today when we build our shuls and our beis medrash, so we try to build in all kinds of leniencies in order to be able to use them for kiddush and stuff like that, and that the rabbi already has to know how to set it up so that we could be lenient in them. A person is not supposed to eat, drink, sleep in a shul. A person who learns all the time in a bet midrash is allowed to eat a little bit. We say that's like his home, but ordinarily we say in a shul one is not supposed to eat, drink, or sleep. One is not allowed to enter a shul or bet midrash for protection from the rain. A person wants good air conditioning, so he's waiting for a bus and he knows he has to wait another 10 minutes to go into the shul. It's not right. We don't enter the shul not for the heat nor for the cold. If a person wants to sit inside the shul and learn, and he'll also derive benefit from the shade or protection from elements, that's okay. But a person is not supposed to enter the shul just to get protection from elements. Yeah.
What if you enter just to get protection from the elements, but then you study something while you're there?
To enter in order to study. So when you go in, don't go in for the elements, go in order to study and let the protection be a byproduct. Let's say one has to call someone else from a shul or a bet midrash. One is not allowed to just walk in, call him, and walk out. Once one enters a shul, one has to spend a small amount of time there. If one knows how to read Chumash, he should read a pasuk or two. If one knows how to read Mishnah, he should read a Mishnah. If one knows how to learn Gemara, he should learn Gemara. If one doesn't know how to learn anything, he should ask someone to teach him. If there's no one there to teach him or everyone else is busy, he should at least be in the shul for a small amount of time to show that he didn't just walk in and walk out. One does not have to sit down. One can stand while one does that. Very often I go into the Beit Midrash to get a sefer. So while I'm walking to get the sefer, I say a pasuk. I stand, I take out the sefer, I learn something, and then I walk out. So if you're just looking, it looks like I just walked in and walked out. But in truth, I make sure to say something, to learn something, either as I'm taking the sefer off the shelf, or as I'm walking to get it back and forth. Ideally, one should stand in one place for a few seconds out of respect to the shul. We don't just walk in and walk out. Now we're holding the 14th chapter in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. We're flying forward. Our sages instituted an introduction to prayer. We know that there are Birkot HaShachad, are the blessings of the morning, the blessing on the Torah, the blessing on the fact that we woke up, that we can discern between day and night, that God made us into a Jew, that God didn't make us a slave, that God didn't make us a woman, that God gave us the ability to see, that God gave us the ability to rise, get out of bed, that God gave us the ability to stand straight, that God lay the earth on the water, that we have what to stand on, that God gave us everything that we need, that God gave us the ability to walk. Those are Birkot HaShachar. We didn't finish enumerating them, but those are the majority of them. After that, our sages instituted Sukkei Zimra. They took verses from Tehillim that are a song, an introduction that's supposed to warm our hearts to prayer. And those songs, if you'll notice, stress the fact that God is watching over us. That God does good to those that do good and bad to those that do bad. They paint a very beautiful picture of this world. Not necessarily the picture you see when you look out the window, but at least the picture we believe is the way the world, that God runs the world. These verses are supposed to bring our hearts closer to God in preparation of the Shmona Esrei, and these are called Psukei Zimra. They are the verses starting with Hodul Hashem Kitov, going through Ashrei, the Alleluka, Vavarech David, Az Yashir, until Yishtama. And our sages instituted a blessing before these verses and a blessing after. These blessings are really the blessings of Psukei Dezimra, the blessing of Baruch Shamar and Yishtama. The Psukei Dezimra is situated in between these two blessings. One may not say Baruch Shamar and then directly afterwards Yishtama. There's no point. You can't say those blessings. One must say some verse in between, because these blessings were instituted around the verses. So if you're not going to say any verse, you cannot say these blessings. That's why the minimum a person can say is Baruch Shamar, and then Ashrei, and then Yishtabach. You have to have some verse in between, because the blessings were instituted around the verses of praise, of Psukei Dezimra. Now, being that we have two blessings, one before and one after the verses, that makes this whole segment into a section that should be really said in continuum, without a break. And that's why a person is not allowed to speak from Baruch Shamar till after Shmon Esrei. But from Baruch Shamar till Yishtabach, you're saying Baruch Shamar, the phrases of the verses of praise, the Psukei Zimra, and then Yishtabach. And then right after Yishtabach, you're supposed to begin the blessings of Shema, go into Shema, finish the blessings of Shema and Shmon Esrei. So from this point on, one is not going to be able to speak freely. So from Baruch Shamar or Hodu, depending on how, if you're a Sfardi or Ashkenazi, we begin the verses of praise, and we're not supposed to talk. There's no difference if you're talking in Hebrew or English or any other language. During the verses of praise, we have a little bit more leniencies, and that is that, let's say you hear a blessing, you're allowed to answer Amen. If you hear everyone saying Shema Yisrael, you can say the first verse with them. If you hear Kaddish or Kedusha or Baruch Hu, you may answer with them. If you can, it's best to answer these things in between the verses, meaning between the chapters. If you can't do that, at least in between the psukim. And if you can't do that, so you may answer these things in the middle of a pasuk. The custom is that when we say Baruch Shamar, we hold the two tzitzis in front in our hand. And when we end the blessing of Baruch Shamar, we kiss them and let them go. Not everyone has this custom, but there is such a custom. When we say Psukei Zimra, ideally we're supposed to say them calmly and sweetly. We're not supposed to rush through them. We're supposed to say them slowly. This is an ideal sense. If you find that you cannot do that, so maybe you should say less and say them at least properly. If you're saying less, then practical tip, switch off. Meaning, people sometimes get into the habit, they say Baruch Shamar, and then Yishtabach, and then the Halukas, and then Yishtabach. And then they end up saying, let's say, four verses, because they can't keep up with everyone. And they always say the same four verses. And then they never familiarize themselves with the other ones. So I would recommend, just practically, halakhically, really, there's an ordering when one has to take off some of the verses, which ones one should take off. But for people who are learning here at the Machon, I would recommend that switch off, that you take 2 months where you say these verses, and then take the next 2 months when you familiarize yourself with the other verses. And hopefully you'll familiarize yourself with all of them, and you'll be swift enough that you know what's coming, you know the words, and you could say it calmly and pleasantly and still keep up with the pace. There's one verse in all of Psukei Zimra that is the most important, and that is Potech et Yadecha Mesbeh L'Chochai Ratzon. And when one says that, one is supposed to be very careful, to be focused and know what he's saying, that God opens his hand and he gives everyone sustenance, and that is where we should have in mind for our Parnassah. The Sfardim have the custom when they say that, they raise their hands like this, like that. Yeah, we're asking Hashem for our Parnassah. Yeah. You could go to Yishtabach on your own, and if you find that for you, if you wait for them to yishtabach, you won't make it to Shmona Esrei with them. So you could even start yishtabach. The thing that you lose is that you don't have the Kaddish. When they say the Kaddish, you're already in the middle of Sukkot Zimla, which isn't ideal, but what can you do? At this stage of the game, you're learning, you're getting better at saying it. That's what I would say to do. Show up early and say Sukkot Zimla. If you can say all of it, that's great. Assuming you understand what you're saying. I'd rather you understand what you're saying and say less than you say more and you don't understand what you're saying.
I don't know if I'm a slow reader or what, but I have to get to Ben Gunn about 45 minutes.
Yeah,
say my
word. We used to have a guy here named Matityahu who also used to show like an hour early. I know because the one Shabbos we had a problem with our hot water urn. And he didn't finish his Giyur yet. So I come home from shul, it's like 7 o'clock or 6:45, and I see that the water is going to go out and we're going to have a danger of a fight. So I run to the machon and I see him here, he's sitting about an hour before prayer, and he's sitting here saying, so I killed his prayer that morning. Like I burned my house. And, he shut off, he didn't get to Giyur. So he shut off the urn for me, and then one Tuesday I already invited him for coffee and cake. He didn't do his gear yet, so he felt comfortable like that. He sat down and drank. By the time he got back to shul, poor guy, I don't know how he managed. That's when I realized that a lot of guys, in order to make it, are really starting 45 minutes an hour beforehand.
This is one of the other things we do, especially in Joel. I don't know why this is relevant.
I hear what you're saying. This complaint has been recurring for quite a number of years here at Machon Meir. I would like you guys to do me a favor. Let's talk in 3 years. Let's see in 3 years what you guys are saying. You're coming with the eyes of someone who's fresh. And I value what you're saying because as someone who's fresh can usually see what people who are within the system don't see. I don't pray here at Machon Meir. I have no idea. Let's see what you yourself are saying 3 years from now. Let's see. I agree with you that the prayer has to be at a pace where everyone feels comfortable and can focus on what they're saying. I don't know why there's a difference in pace between Aleinu and the rest of the prayer. I urge you to write down your thoughts today because if by looking around you, you see that everyone somehow has reached the state where they're praying too quickly and they're not focused on their prayer the way they should, and we don't want to sit here and start saying bad things about other people, but bottom line, people are praying at a very fast pace, so you have to wonder if one day you won't look like that. So why don't you write yourselves a letter today about the importance of praying correctly and what you feel today about all those people who are praying quickly, and read it to yourselves in 5 years. Let's see where you're holding in 5 years. I think you're 100% right. I just have to wonder where all the people who have been complaining for the last number of years, where they're holding today. I don't know. I'd like to think, and from some of the emails I get, I really see that they still have the same complaints. To have these complaints is positive. It means that you're praying at a good pace. It means that you're focused on your prayer. I don't know.
I think I could use it. If it is too tame to be brought, half as fast, and Shmona Esrei twice as fast. But the end of Shmona Esrei, like sitting there for a while, just waiting for everyone else to finish, and then it's Sukkot Nidin Rabba, I'm like speeding through to finish with everyone else.
So you should know one thing. If you started with the Chazan, if you started your Shmona Esrei on time, then you're okay. You don't have to worry about anything. Let's say the Chazan began his Chazrat Hashas, you don't have to listen. You don't have to worry about it. When he reaches the Kedusha, he's going to say, and Kadesh, and all that, you just stand silent until he finishes Boch Tashem, Akela Kadosh. He finishes that, you continue with your prayer, you don't have to think about it. He could go his pace, he could pass you, whatever you want, that's not your business. So long as you started with the congregation, you don't have to worry about their pace. The only time you have to worry about finishing in time for them is when you don't start on time. When you start late, then we say you're responsible for finishing on time to answer with them because you started late. But if you started with the congregation, then you don't have to worry about anything. You go your own route. You're not responsible for it.
But I learned this specifically because I started coming from here and I was told he was not an issue right now. So it's peculiar that throughout the whole, you understand. I understand what is normal base, which I talk about, that you can have and people can have in system. And when suddenly it's beyond fast, it's something I cannot comprehend how it spread so fast the other level. And it's everywhere. I don't know, a person listening or reading the star feeling is that, you know, even though that the great rate of listening, if you have this, in that.
What is an aspired issue? I don't think you'll find that.
Okay. More.
But, the Sephardi have a different problem when it comes to Aleinu, because they don't say Kaddish after Aleinu. Mm. So some of the congregation is already packing their bags, walking out the door as they say Aleinu. Okay, what can you do? Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to either one. I don't know. That's two different customs. Also, I don't know the source for the customs. There are two customs. I don't remember. As far as the source, why you fight into like this, next thing I don't understand.
For me, it's not just like you have gone before me. It means that the congregation can see what's going to be read. And for me, that's your job, because to see what has been read. And it's already done. This is fun. I don't care anymore like that. Well, now, what is now in the book? Well, it's from before the reading. And it's okay. There's now the truth that we start. You are saying.
Okay. Respond to Yehi Shmei Rabban Barach Lo Lam Lo Mil Maya. That's the thing, Amen, Yehi Shmei Rabban, that's the main part. All the Amens, the first five Amens are what's important. The rest, and even that, you don't have to. If you want to focus on your Tachanun is one of the most powerful prayers we have. If you want to focus on your Tachanun, you could stop only for the Yehi Shmei Rabban. I'll tell you, I'm answering you more on a psychological level than a halachic level. I'm approaching this from a perspective that the average person who does tshuva or gerut is going to have a lot of frustrations, which is what we're hearing voiced over here. There are a lot of frustrations with keeping up, with maintaining the faith, with learning a new language, and it's something which someone can't understand unless he's gone through it. I never understood this until I decided I'm going to try to adopt my ancient German pronunciation, and suddenly every paragraph took me much longer because I had to notice the owls, the yaomer, and the different kamatz gadol, kamatz katan, and it was like I was learning to read from scratch. And when I was standing in shul a half hour after everyone left, only then did I start understanding the frustrations that a person who is fresh to Judaism.
So it's okay if you stop your katanun, go respond, and then come back.
So that's what I'm saying, that I think that the correct answer is individual. Whatever will give you less frustration at this stage of the game is what I would do. That's more important to me than there are halachot about this. Yes, the dry halach is you should enter Kaddish and then go back to your tachanun. But I would say it's fair to minimize it, so just then go back to your tachanun if that's what's going to give you more satisfaction, because that's a very, very important part of what's going on here. In order for a person to continue growing, he has to feel like, I'm doing what I have to, and when we're going at one pace and everyone else is going three times that pace, and we have to start our prayer 45 minutes earlier and we end 25 minutes later and we miss breakfast, so we're late for breakfast and our whole day is trying to catch up when we've done our best. So that's a lot of frustration, and that's why I think that for people at the Machon, or people who it is taking much longer, we have to think how to minimize the frustration and at the same time attain good habits. I don't like people skipping around, but I have to say that I could understand that a person says, it's very difficult for me to wake up 45 minutes beforehand or an hour beforehand in order to be able to keep up with the prayer at the Machon. Those who could, that is the ideal. Those who cannot, so they'll have to skip a little bit, maybe even skip a lot, but you have to work on slowly getting everything in. The problem is that people sometimes remain with that skipping for years, which is a problem. Once a person gets into the habit of skipping, he usually doesn't get out of it. That's why it's not the ideal. The ideal is that a person should say most of it, and that's why I said you should switch off between what you're skipping around, so that ultimately you will get to saying all of it.
You look straight when you're going down the road, right?
What do you mean? Good. Keep the sense of humor. It's important. Yeah.
Two questions. One is that since most of us we do the finish with the Amidah.
Yeah.
And then by the time they just come back and they finish.
Yeah.
And now while we are playing, people are going out and coming in. If they just pass by us, are we supposed to start the
Amidah again? No, for sure not. If someone walks in front of you, he made a mistake. It has nothing to do with you. If you're standing in Amidah and someone walks in front of you, so we say he shouldn't have done that. But you have to
it's
his problem, it's not your problem. And some people rely on the fact that there's a table in front of you, a standard in front of you, a chair in front of you, so they say there's like a barrier in front of you, and that's why they feel comfortable walking in front of you. And if you walk more than 4 footsteps in front of you, then that's also okay. I mean, if someone's standing in Shmonetre, and if you chose a place that's right next to the door and everyone has to pass in front of you, so then you have to think, so maybe choose a place where it won't bother people, maybe in the front of the shul, maybe more distant from the door. It's important that you who knows the halacha, that they shouldn't be passing in front of you, should try to choose a place where they won't have to choose and walk in front of you.
We learn here how to rub ourselves with the talit. And then there is the usual way people doing this way. And if the somebody from the like always come and tell you to change your way.
If it's the Rav, and he's your rabbi.
This problem is everyday problem for me. Is that, and I know why I do that.
You could do whatever you want. Whatever you want. You want, tell him this is what I learned. You want. Show him, you could tell him, look, I learned like this. This is what my rabbi said. If you want, you could do his way, because that way is also legitimate, the way the two things.
The reason for asking this way for me, it looks like more reasonable.
Whatever you want. They're both legitimate. They're both customs, and they both have basis in halakha, so you could do whichever one you want. It's important that you stick to one so your children don't grow up confused. You go one way, go one way.
So I'm not against you, like,
this might be. Yeah. Shabbat Shalom regards to your parents.
The way the most people do.
What?
I'm not obligated to, I just might have to.
No. If what you're doing is actually legitimate, no. Not in this point. There are things we will learn where if you're part of a congregation, you shouldn't be different than the congregation. If the whole congregation is saying Kedusha like Sephardim, so you shouldn't be calling out like Ashkenazim. If the Hasid says Brichu and everyone answers Amen, you shouldn't be yelling out Brichu like an Ashkenazi. You're not supposed to show you're different in the Shul. But this is something where everyone has different customs and you can do what you want. Anyways, it's not part of the procession that's done in Shul. It's something that really you should be doing at home. You should be coming to shul with your talis and tefillin. It's assuming you walk through a clean neighborhood. You won't encounter things that are dirty, and you can maintain bodily and mental purity for that period of time. So yeah, Daniel. That's a difficult question about whether you could daven in such a shul. Can one pray in a shul where there's no mechitza? For now, let's leave it hanging. If it'll be relevant, so then we'll have to sit down and figure out if there's any room to be lenient. In general, one should not pray in such a shul. If one has no other choice and has the only shul there, and so then we'll have to sit down and really analyze what is there, a separation aside from that? Is there something? We'll sit down and figure it out. If it is halachic, if it is relevant, so then we'll have to see if there's any room to be lenient to pray in such a shul, or if you have to pray at home. But let's see. If it will be relevant, so then we have to sit down and see. But the general rule is you shouldn't pray in such a place. No. Just saying, Michael, you want something?
Yeah, forget.
Okay. Just saying, Everett?
Yeah. If you put on Shabbat and the room in which you live, it's not really doing well and stuff like that, it's better not to do that, I think.
It depends on what does mean cleans well. One, the fact that it's not clean isn't the problem. The question is there a bad smell there? Usually where people are sleeping, so there's a bad smell. So then one would not be able to make a blessing there. Mm-hmm. That would be the reason not to put on your towels and film there.
Also
Modani was instituted specifically because it does not have God's name and can be said when things aren't clean. What are you saying in Modani? The beginning of Modani. Modani Lepanecha, I thank you. Melech Chai V'Chayam, King was living and eternally present. Shechazal Pabin Nishmatit, you returned within me my soul. Rabbah Emunatecha. Bechena, with compassion. Rabbah Emunatecha, your faith is great. That first sentence was compiled specifically because it does not have God's name and can be said under all circumstances. So that you could say, even before you wash your hands. The idea is you open your eyes, even though there might be a bad smell, your hands aren't clean, you could say that thing. Yeah.
When we go to shul with the children, up to what extent do the girls can impact
that? So I asked Rabbi Feinstein, so what age can a person bring his daughter into shul with him? And his answer to me was the same answer he gave everyone. He said, until people start yelling at you. So I said, and maybe I'll be the rabbi of the shul and people won't have the courage to yell at me. So he said, don't worry, they'll yell at you. So that was his answer. And I tried to get a more accurate answer out of him. And that was the answer he gave me. He said, don't worry, people will tell you when it's not right. What?
You didn't ask him what the
interview told him. Not, that I didn't think to ask that.
Perhaps I wonder, would she eventually say, Daddy has to be on the other side? Maybe
okay, that's
she's
also good.
Old enough to realize. She, like, for example, you have to sit there as soon as, like, your daughter
I think he meant much younger than that. I think he meant younger. I think people will complain younger. I think when a girl is like 6, 7, people will start complaining. And she might not understand at that age that she can't come in to get a candy from the candy man. I think so. I don't have experience yet. My girl's only 1 year old. She's not coming to shul yet. So, I don't know. So, the Mitzvah will pick up. We're in the middle of the 14th chapter, and we'll pick up Mitzvah next week. Shabbat Shalom.